from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, we take a look at a bold proposal for Caltrain released this week by Spur. With population growth and long commutes driven by high housing costs, the need for robust public transit infrastructure is urgent. Yet Spur argues the main system that runs through the heart of Silicon Valley has largely been ignored. We look at their Caltrain Corridor Vision Plan, as well as the current challenges the system faces, especially in light of recent funding delays to Caltrain by the Trump administration. That's next on Forum. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. The South Bay's transportation system is breaking down, according to the urban planning think tank Spur, which released an ambitious proposal for the region yesterday. Called the Caltrain Corridor Vision Plan, Spur proposes improvements to Highway 101 and calls for Caltrain to quintuple its ridership and expand service into downtown San Francisco. But Spur's report follows the Trump administration's decision last week to suspend nearly $650 million in funds for Caltrain's electrification, dealing a blow to the rail agency's ability to make needed improvements. We envision and assess the future of Caltrain in this hour of Forum. Joining me are Ratna Amin. She's Transportation Policy Director at Spur. Good morning, Ratna Amin.
Good morning, Mina.
Randy Rentschler, he's Director of Legislation and Public Affairs at the Metropolitan Transportation Commission. Good morning to you, Randy Rentschler.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And also with us is Seamus Murphy, Chief Communications Officer with Caltrain. And Seamus, I'll start with you. Could you just remind us quickly, what is the ridership of Caltrain?
Well, we carry 65,000 riders every weekday, and that's a number that's been growing exponentially over the last several years. We connect some of the largest and fastest growing job and population centers in the Bay Area. We serve the 101 corridor, which is one of the most innovative areas in the world, really, and is driving GDP for our state and our nation. And it's we need to be able to support good mobility options along that corridor to facilitate further growth in that area.
Yep, it's 50 miles of commuter rail through San Francisco, San Mateo, and Santa Clara counties. And Ratna Amin, what are some of the structural problems that you've seen in terms of that whole corridor and its public transportation needs?
Well, as you mentioned, the transportation system is breaking down. Caltrain Corridor, center of the world's economy, is choking on its congestion. And we created a vision plan to imagine overcoming some of the breakdowns in the train schedule, not having enough trains available to meet the growing demand for trains, the traffic on 101, and the fact that even buses are stuck in traffic. So we envision a major growth program for the Caltrain service itself. That's why we call it the Caltrain Corridor, not the 101 corridor. And getting us to a train that arrives every couple of minutes at a modern station, kind of like a Swiss rail meets BART. We also have solutions for Highway 101, ferries, and more.
And let's break those down one by one. But before we do, just in terms of the overall regional pressures that have caused so much of, you know, this increase in demand, but, you know, difficulty in terms of meeting it, Randy Rentschler, if you could just tell us quickly what I'm sure a lot of folks already know about the population growth in our region, but what kind of strain has it put on our infrastructure?
Well, it has put a big strain on it, but I think these are problems a lot of places would be envious of. You know, the 3.3 million people in these three counties on the Peninsula Corridor are greater than 22 states. And even though we have to share our two senators with the rest of the state of California, often the power is in the Senate in Washington, D.C. But look, the Bay Area has a very strong economy. It has a disproportionate share of the state's gross national product. We send a lot of money to Sacramento. And what we need are investments such as Caltrain to support this economy and to support the job growth that we have here in the Bay Area that really the whole state benefits from.
So, Ratna Amin, talk to us about what are some of the key improvements that you think can be made to this system, and also just how far your vision extends, because it's pretty big and it goes pretty far out.
Yeah, well, we were very proud to work on this project with Stanford University, Silicon Valley Leadership Group, and the San Mateo County Economic Development Alliance. And I want to first say that we all want to see the electrification of Caltrain as just a baseline step, and I'm sure we'll talk more about that. But beyond that, what we want to see is the addition of more passing tracks so that you can have fast trains and slow trains, like a lot of rail systems around the world, more train cars to make so that we can offer train service more frequently, modernize the rail stations. A lot of them haven't been touched in decades. The railroad's 150 years old, and a lot of it hasn't been upgraded in that time. So the other big item, and it's a little abstruse, is grade separations. There are more than 40 at grade crossings where local streets meet the railroad right now. And if you live in one of those communities, you know what a big problem those at-grade crossings are. So to achieve this world-class public transit service that we're imagining, we also need to address something like the grade separations. The last thing I'll mention is getting Caltrain down to downtown San Francisco. There are more jobs near the Transbay Transit Center in downtown near 2nd and Mission Street, where we're building a train terminal. There are more jobs there than anywhere else in this corridor. So if we can get the train to that place, we really can start moving people out of cars and helping more people in the region access these opportunities.
And what would it cost to get to your vision?
Well, when we looked at our costs, we looked at all the things I mentioned, plus the cost it takes to operate these trains and maintain the railroad. A lot of our infrastructure is decaying, and we want to make sure we take care of that problem. Also, we have proposals for Highway 101 and ferries. So altogether, we're looking at about $18 to $21 billion. We think it's over the next 20 years.
And as you said, we'll get to the electrification delays. But before that, you also mentioned challenges in terms of its governance structure and its funding. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about what challenges there might be to achieving that goal and implementing this plan?
Sure. While people move around this region and this corridor seamlessly, well, not when there's congestion, but we don't see these political boundaries, but it's actually three counties with three separate transportation agencies, three local bus operators, the Caltrans, which runs the highways, but they're partially managed by the counties. And then Caltrain is owned by three counties. I'm sure Seamus can tell us more about this, and governed by three counties. So funding is fragmented, planning is fragmented, and it's really difficult to build consensus on solutions.
Would you agree, Seamus Murphy?
Yeah, I would agree, and we would agree with the concepts and the goals in the SPUR report. It's absolutely vital that we make improvements that are going to upgrade the Caltrain system to support regional growth. The foundation of all of that is electrification, and we have a near-term plan. We're fortunate to have a near-term plan to be able to increase capacity on the Caltrain line, provide more frequent service to all of the communities that depend on Caltrain, and in the process, really relieve congestion around the Bay Area. One of the consequences that comes with this rapid economic and job and population growth that we're experiencing in the Bay Area is that congestion becomes an issue and really a barrier to that continuing. Caltrain electrification, if we can expand the system and increase service on the line, we can go a long way towards addressing that issue.
So in looking at Caltrain's strategic plan, it looked like your three shorter-term goals, I guess is a better way to put it, because I'm sure it will take a while. But your immediate goals are, of course, electrification, lengthening all the platforms. Is that right?
Yeah, we have an effort that would occur after electrification is complete. We call it CalMod 2.0. We're modernizing Caltrain right now by electrifying it and providing the system with high-performance electric trains that will change the way that the system operates and the way that people experience transit on the peninsula. Once we do that, we have an opportunity to fully convert the fleet to electric trains, to run longer trains by buying additional EMUs, electric multiple units are what the rail cars are called that we would be operating. And if we run longer trains, we're going to need longer platforms. So we can upgrade those platforms and in the process raise the platforms so that we can accomplish level boarding. Today, you have to take a step up to be able to access a Caltrain train. That creates longer dwell times and prevents us from operating more service. If we have level boarding, we can reduce those dwell times, we can add in more service, and we can increase the capacity of the system exponentially in the process.
And again, Seamus Murphy is Chief Communications Officer for Caltrain. We're also joined by Randy Rentschler, Director of Legislation and Public Affairs at the Metropolitan Transportation Commission, the Transportation Planning, Coordinating, and Financing Agency for the nine counties, San Francisco Bay Area. And we have with us Radna Amin, Transportation Policy Director at SPUR, a San Francisco Bay Area urban planning think tank. We're looking at SPUR's ambitious proposal for reimagining Caltrain called the Caltrain Corridor Vision Plan. And we want to invite you, our listeners, to join the conversation. Do you ride Caltrain? What do you think of the service? What has been your experience at stations? Do you drive and would you ride Caltrain if improvements like the ones that Radna Amin and Seamus Murphy are outlining were made? You can call us at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum at kqed.org, post them on our website, kqed.org/forum, or on Facebook or Twitter. So let's talk about electrification, Seamus Murphy, because it sounds like that's definitely just a foundational need to be able to do many of the improvements that you're seeking. How much of a setback was it when the federal government delayed its, $647 million to Caltrain?
Well, it was unexpected. We have completed all of the statutory requirements to receive that grant. We have been working with the Federal Transit Administration for the last 2 years to secure that grant. The project was rated highly by FTA and recommended for approval. And every other project that has proceeded to that phase of the grant process has been successful in completing what's called a full funding grant agreement, which is the final step in the process. Final step has been delayed. We are working with our contractors who are already in place and ready to start construction on this project. It's very shovel-ready, and we're working with them to extend the deadline for the start of that construction so that we don't have that contractual deadline preventing the project from moving forward. We want to give the federal government time to review this project now that they have issued this delay. We think that when they do take that time and review the project, they're going to discover that this is an effort that achieves many of the goals that the administration has expressed during this this early time in terms of job creation throughout the nation and the improving the nation's ability to remain economically competitive in the world.
And it was all 14 of the state's Republican congressional delegation that called for the money to be put on hold, mainly because they were concerned about high-speed rail.
Yeah, and that really has been the only criticism of this this project is that it is related to a high-speed rail project, and that's actually a criticism that's been borne out to not be true as it was expressed by the delegation in their letter. This is a commuter rail project. Caltrain's a commuter rail agency. We're a transit system, and we're seeking transit funding. This project is a standalone improvement that has independent utility for an existing system. High-speed rail is a project that is that would operate in the future. High-speed rail would require additional infrastructure, things like passing tracks and grade separations and stations and curve straightening before they could operate service on the Caltrain line. They're going through an effort now to study those things, but in the meantime, Caltrain electrification can improve the existing service for commuters that that utilize it now and that will be utilizing it more once we have more service to provide.
Have you talked with any of the legislators to, you know, figure out what can be done to be able to avoid or to bring the money in more quickly, get a promise that it'll be done more quickly?
We've been making our case to many of the decision makers in this process, and I would characterize it less as a partisan issue and more of a geographic issue. The Central Valley does have a significant amount of opposition to the high-speed rail project. They have viewed this project as being connected to that high-speed rail project. We've been making the case that we're a standalone project, and even support supporters around the country who like high-speed rail come from the Republican side of the aisle. I think a couple of days after the letter was sent from Central Valley, Republicans opposing the electrification project and high-speed rail, the president announced that he was supportive of high-speed rail and thought that it would be a good investment to make. So the reasons for the delay in the award of the Caltrain grant, there are still question marks about why that is happening. We don't think that the high-speed rail issue will be a reason why this grant could be denied. We think the grant will be awarded because of all of the benefits that it provides to the region and the broader nation.
Do you have any sense of when? I mean, a timeline?
Well, the information we have from the Federal Transit Administration says that a decision will be made in conjunction with the release of the administration's budget proposal to Congress, and that usually happens in the April-May timeframe. So we need to make sure that we are doing everything we can do to allow the project to survive until that decision is made.
Well, we at Forum did reach out to members of Congress, Kevin McCarthy, Jeff Denham, Doug LaMalfa, and Tom McClintock. They either declined to come on or speak with us, or they didn't respond. Randy Rentschler is someone who has, you know, a view over the region. Should we be worried about any more projects that get federal funding?
Well, I guess I would think of an homage to John Lennon, where we can kind of imagine a different outcome, right? And I think the frustration that all of us have working in Washington, D.C. is this longstanding issue about California's congressional delegation that often works on partisan grounds as opposed to in the interest of the entire state. And I think what we'd like to imagine and what Seamus has been talking about trying to achieve is to get the entire California congressional delegation to pull for an investment of near $700 million that other states would love to have. It's very difficult to achieve this outcome. This is a project that would benefit the entire state as a result of supporting jobs and economic growth here in the Bay Area. It really redounds to the state's general fund. And I think that's the challenge that we're trying to overcome. Now, the California congressional delegation has historically been split for decades and decades, kind of to the great satisfaction of other states. And so I think we are frustrated that a group of California Republicans see this as a kind of a partisan train, you know, just like Obamacare is the old president's program, even though it was a Republican idea. High-speed rail is like an Obama train. And our view is transportation is nonpartisan and it benefits everybody. And I think what we're trying to do is make the case to the delegation that this is a thing that benefits the whole state and that we ought to be able to focus on that.
Well, Andy writes, the likely loss of federal funds for Caltrain's electrification is also incredibly important to every company in the Bay Area. Aside from the Bay Area Council gently ribbing Kevin McCarthy at a fundraiser, I haven't heard anything from major tech companies or employers protesting this short-sighted, highly politicized move. What can business leaders do to get the Caltrain project back on track? Ratna Amin, this report that you worked on with the Silicon Valley Leadership Group, which, of course, has many tech companies as its members, are you hearing anything from tech companies about stepping up to try to help either implement your plan, which depends on electrification?
Sure. You know, in addition to Leadership Group, a number of specific businesses were part of this vision plan process, such as Google and Genentech and Facebook. And so I want to mention that. And what we've all experienced in this corridor over the last year or two is an incredible amount of interest on the part of businesses in being involved with all of these challenges with the transportation system, whether it's creating a vision, actually getting the projects done on the ground and building local support, and then helping to get funding. And there has actually been a lot of advocacy on the part of the business community that directed at the federal government and our Republican legislators over the last few weeks. And I think that's really great to see because history shows us that business and civic leadership is really essential to doing both of these things, getting the federal government to give us what we need and be a partner, and also to create a vision on the ground. BART was created by the business community in a lot of ways and their leadership. And so we're living through a time right now, I think, where you're going to see the business community take a lot of leadership on the Bay Area transportation landscape.
Okay, so leadership and advocacy. But Seamus Murphy, are they also putting money behind that leadership and advocacy and offering to help with this funding gap that's been unexpectedly presented by the federal government?
You know, we haven't gone there with the tech companies yet. The major employers along the 101 corridor have been incredibly supportive and are directly invested in the future of the Caltrain system. They recognize that that system is tied to their ability to be able to grow and remain economically competitive. Many of those companies that Andy's talking about formed a few years ago the Caltrain Commuter Coalition to do just that, to advocate for these improvements. And they've been effective so far in doing that. We've been able to put together $1.3 billion in local, state, and regional funds to match this federal investment. And this is the last piece of the puzzle that would allow this project to happen. The federal money, we don't think, is going away. We think that it will be approved and we'll be able to move this project forward. If we aren't able to do that for some reason, we would need to think about alternative sources of funding, and we would have that conversation when the time is appropriate, but I don't think we'll need to go down that route. The support that we're receiving for this project is broad-based. It's bipartisan. It covers employers and commuters and workers, not just in the Bay Area, but throughout the country because of the jobs that we're creating in places like Utah and Colorado and Florida and Maryland. It really is the type of project that the nation should be behind, and we just need to wait a little bit longer to make sure that we're able to move forward.
Well, let's go to some of our callers. Linda in Daly City. Hi, Linda.
Good morning. I'm a 40-year user of Caltrain and BART. My biggest concern, really, about all of this is if you do not improve the scheduling between BART and Caltrain, you can electrify all day and night, and nothing really is going to happen. It is unconscionable to leave northbound passengers at the Millbrae transfer station. They have to wait in the cold for 30 minutes for a train. And the other way, BART lands 2 minutes before Caltrain takes off at the Millbrae transfer station. You cannot go up the stairs and down again in 2 minutes. You have to wait one solid hour. There is no communication. If there's an equipment problem on BART, Caltrain will not wait 1 minute for people to come down, and it costs $60 to take a cab to Palo Alto. It is really crazy,
Yes.
And I'm hoping you'll fix it.
Well, Linda, you are definitely underscoring a point that was made in the report about the need for more coordinated connections between these systems, Ratna,
Yeah, this is something Spur has focused on a lot, that we actually have a embarrassment riches when it comes to transit in the Bay Area, ferries, streetcars, BART, and Caltrain, as the caller mentioned, but they are not as well coordinated as they should be. And this particular connection drives people crazy. BART and Caltrain at Millbrae, it seems like we should be able to fix it. And maybe we can find out more from Caltrain.
Yeah,
this is it's a perfect example of a problem that electrification will help resolve. There's only so much you can do in terms of frequency when you have a diesel system and two tracks to work with. Capacity, frequency, those were limited and were maxed out in terms of that what that infrastructure will allow. Once we're electrified, we'll be able to provide more service, make those connections more easily, and coordinate schedules with other connecting agencies because the frequency will allow us to appreciate those benefits and have a schedule that's more flexible and be able to address that concern that was just mentioned.
We are envisioning and assessing Caltrain during this hour with Seamus Murphy of Caltrain, Randy Rentschler of the MTC, and Ratna Amin of Spur. We'll talk more with our listeners after the break. I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're looking at Spur's proposal for Caltrain. With population growth and long commutes driven by high housing costs, the commuter rail system is essential, and Spur has laid out an ambitious plan for improvement and growth. But even Caltrain's short-term goals, like electrification of its diesel trains, is delayed now that the Trump administration has put the brakes on promised funding. And so we're talking about how to move forward with Seamus Murphy of Caltrain, Randy Rentschler, Director of Legislation and Public Affairs at MTC, the Metropolitan Transportation Commission, and with Ratna Amin, Policy Director at Spur. And with you, our listeners, you can call us at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. 833-6786. What's your experience with Caltrain? If you ride it, what would you like to know from them in terms of their goals for what they'd like to achieve? If you drive, what would it take for you to get on Caltrain? The number again, 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. Our email address is forum@kqed.org. Our website is kqed.org/forum. And we're also on Facebook and Twitter. And you can also see Spur's full report on our website. Juan writes, how about Caltrain runs like any other business and charge what it costs to run the system? If they think they can up ridership, take out a loan. But don't take money from poor people in Virginia so rich people in San Francisco can pretend that they're ecologically sound. Timothy tweets something familiar, if California is the sixth largest economy in the world, why do you need taxes from the rest of the country for your new trains? Seamus Murphy?
Well, Caltrain is fortunate that we do have a high fare box recovery ratio, meaning that most of our operating budget is paid for by fares. If you look around the country at transit systems, all of them are subsidized in some way. Caltrain requires less subsidy because the fares make up such a large share of our operating budget, but they don't make up all of it. And we need to cover the cost of operating the railroad through some sort of subsidy. Right now, that subsidy that is required is provided by our member agencies, and there isn't any dedicated funding that is committed to Caltrain on a year-to-year basis. It's a major issue for the service because it means that in any given year, if one of our member agencies decides that they need to invest more in their first priority, maintaining their bus and light rail service, then that could affect their ability to invest in Caltrain service. Dedicated funding for operations is critical to the future of this agency. At the same time that we're improving and modernizing the system and investing in capital improvements that are going to make the system better, we have to also think about ways to be able to provide us with dedicated operating revenue so that we can provide the kind of service that that infrastructure will allow us to provide.
Ratna, I mean, you want to get in here as well.
Yeah, thanks. And I agree with what Seamus said. And I want to also remind everybody that California gives money to the federal government also. We're not just taking. One of the recommendations in our report is that we do a business plan for this railroad, and that's common for these types of commuter railroads around the world, to find out what are the most important investments we should be making, prioritize them in terms of, and look at fares and other sources of revenue to figure out how this can be the most economically efficient railroad as possible. It's an incredible market for rail. There are people traveling in both directions, which is really unusual. Multiple big destinations like Stanford University, San Francisco, San Jose, et cetera. And a business plan would really help us understand what kind of subsidy we need, if at all. It's possible if we priced fares differently that the railroad could cover its own operating costs.
And just to get a little more specific about when you mentioned ticket prices, just how much is it? Just remind folks, what is the cost?
Well,
how does it compare to BART?
We have a zone-based system, so it depends how far you're going. There's a cost associated with each zone, and then there's a base fare. And so the cost really depends on how far you're traveling on the Caltrain line. We are engaged right now in a comprehensive fare study that's looking at the right fare structure for the agency, whether the pricing is where it should be in terms of maximizing revenue for the agency at the same time trying to continue to drive increased ridership. We're looking at things like off-peak discounts that will help relieve overcrowding during the peak period and encourage more people to ride during the times when there is space on the train. All of those issues are under review, and we'll have some findings that will be coming out later this year to give us more direction about how the fare structure should be changed to make sure that we are running like a business, that we are taking advantage of opportunities to increase our fare box recovery ratio even more than it is today.
And let's hear from Jason in San Jose. Hi, Jason.
Hi. I'm a big Caltrain fan. I'm fortunate that my company Fleet Board pays for my GoPass. That's great. One of the things, though, that I think would make riding it better would be to have Wi-Fi on the train. I know a lot of people wonder this question. ask this question. Like, I know it's an RFP process, but why does it seem to be taking so long? We have Wi-Fi on airplanes. Why not on Caltrain?
Yeah.
Seamus Murphy.
It's a challenge for sure. We have a number of users, heavy technology users who have very high expectations about the quality, what the quality of Wi-Fi should be on a train that's traveling at 80 miles an hour. It's not as simple of a technical solution as it would appear. Agencies that have rolled out Wi-Fi improvements have actually pulled them back because the quality was lacking and the complaints were frequent about the quality. So we want to make sure when we do it right. Modernization of the system and the delivery of new trains is an opportunity to help realize some of those improvements. And we are working on concepts for shorter-term implementation of amenities generally, including Wi-Fi. So it's something that we're thinking about. It is a one of our most requested improvements on the Caltrain system. We're taking that request seriously.
Jim in Fremont. Hi, Jim.
Hey, good morning. I've only taken Caltrain a handful of times, so I'm not that familiar with it, but I am a frequent user of BART in the East Bay. And what... whatever your guest was describing for the modernization plan for Caltrain sound pretty much exactly like what BART is, with the elimination of the at-grade crossings and the not having to step up to board the train. So my question is, why not just extend BART all the way around up the peninsula? I know that there already is in the works an extension from Fremont down to San Jose. So what is the feasibility and just why not extend it all the way around?
Sure, Jim, thanks. Let me put that to Ratna Amin.
Sure. We hear that question a lot. BART is popular in the Bay Area, and East Bay users like the caller are very familiar with it and rely on it. So why not have it in more places? But it's a funny question for our region. How much BART do you want versus standard rail? And what we discovered in our research is that the future is in a lot of ways for California in the standard rail network. We already have a lot of regular rail like Caltrain running all over the state. And the vision for the state is that all our cities will be connected by this rail network. And you want that interoperability. So a train that's coming from Sacramento can hop onto the same tracks that Caltrain uses today. So that's one issue. The other thing is that BART's very expensive. And so you may want it, but we can't have everything. You don't want it all competing. A lot of what we can do to upgrade the Caltrain we have today is much more economical than building a whole new BART system.
Randy Richard, do you want to add anything to this since you are, you know, our regional person here?
Well, look, BART around the Bay has been a thought that's been around since the 1960s, and it certainly is an attractive idea, let's be clear. As Ratna mentioned, you know, Caltrain has been there since President Lincoln. So it's an asset we have. And I think on the economic grounds and also on the effectiveness grounds, Caltrain works in this corridor. If we were to put BART down this corridor, it wouldn't replace Caltrain. The grade SEPs and high-speed rail and all that stuff would happen anyway. BART would just be a complement, like it is on the corridor that they do share, which is essentially down to about the airport, where Caltrain and BART run in parallel. So these systems are not in competition. They're in complementary mode. And the question is one of affordability and one of desirability. We can't have everything. Modernizing what we have seems to be the right decision right now.
Well, let me thank Jim for the question and go to Vipul in San Jose. Good morning.
Yeah, morning. So I have a couple of questions. First is to improve service down south beyond Tamien, and actually even just beyond San Jose, down to Tamien, and then down south to Blossom Hill. There used to be at one time four trains during the commute hours running up and down, and now that's been reduced to three. Actually, it's been a while since it's been reduced to three. How can we improve them to offer more options to the people, you know, south of San Jose? Because getting into San Jose, you know, is just basically going to clog up the roads that this thing is supposed to alleviate. Second thing is that VTA through downtown is slow as molasses. It slows down to 2 miles an hour, and it renders the service pretty much ineffective for people who want to commute. How about putting that thing underground so that, you know, people can quickly go through San Jose downtown and get to where they want to get to? And the third thing is, going from Santa Teresa into San Jose, I would like to see if there is a grand plan for linking up to Mountain View through 85, you know, because 85, as you know, gets clogged up too. To alleviate some of that, I think that would be a prime, prime something for picking, because you could just shoot that VTA down on 85 and link up in Martindale.
Well,
I'm taking my questions.
Yes, thank you. Well, Vipul, you've made a lot of good points and about your own experience using the system. I don't know if
for the
Seamus
Caltrain,
Murphy, you want to address at least, yeah.
For the Caltrain part of that question, it's a question of trackage rights and ownership of the corridor. We're one of the reasons why we're able to move forward with modernization of the Caltrain corridor and electrification of that corridor is because Caltrain owns the right of way. It's not a normal arrangement for a passenger rail system to actually own the corridor that it operates on. We do own the corridor down to San Jose to Tamian. Once you get south of Tamian, the corridor is owned by Union Pacific, a freight rail operator. We have the rights to operate a limited amount of service between Tamian and Gilroy. So we are always looking for ways to increase service, but without owning the corridor, the challenges are more significant. More negotiation is required. Santa Clara County voters passed a measure last November that included funding to expand service down to Gilroy. And that gives us a leg up and an opportunity to have that conversation and work towards that goal.
You're talking about Measure B, the half-cent sales tax?
Correct. So VTA is leading that effort. We will be collaborating with them to explore those options. But as with anything in transit and transportation, more service comes at additional cost, and we need to be able to cover those costs if we're going to be able to make it happen.
Well, Sky asks this question: why is electrification so important for increasing the frequency of trains? Couldn't Caltrain just buy more diesel engines as an alternative? Do you want to talk about what electric trains allow you to do that diesel ones don't?
It's a good question. Yeah. And a previous caller compared what we're doing, electrifying Caltrain, to BART. It's an astute observation. Anybody who's been on BART knows how fast it accelerates and decelerates. If you've been on a Caltrain train, you recognize that diesel locomotive takes a long time to get up to 79 miles an hour and takes a long time to slow down. That diesel environment with a two-track system really limits the amount of service and frequency that you can operate on the line. Once we convert to electric trains, those trains will accelerate and decelerate over less distance and take less time to do that. And you can fit more service into the schedule just because of that high-performance characteristic of those trains.
Well, let me thank Sky. And Rich writes, please ask your guests what the specific plans are for eliminating every grade crossing along the line. Where is that money coming from, and what is the timeline for completing those improvements? Are city taxpayers on the hook? My recollection is that San Carlos spent nearly $100 million building two overcrossings. Ratna Amin, do you want to address this?
Sure. Right now, grade separations are funded from a variety of sources, and some are local. San Mateo County sales tax has a fund for some grade separations, including San Carlos, but that's going to run out soon. There is a hope that maybe when high-speed rail operates in the corridor, they might fund some grade separations, but that's uncertain. The Measure B Santa Clara County sales tax you mentioned has some funds. So you see it's a patchwork of funding, and it's not sufficient. In our vision plan, we estimate the cost of doing the remaining grade separations, and they're expensive. The easy ones have been done, and we have to raise the money to do it. They are a really big improvement for safety, though. And even just on safety grounds, we could justify these costs. We just need to come together on the funding.
Well, Laurel tweets, will the new train cars be wheelchair accessible?
They will.
Michael says, I'm a Caltrain rider. I would love electrification, but there's opposition to it on the peninsula due to proposed elevated rail lines through middle of downtowns. What's your relationship with peninsula residents?
Well, I think that question is probably more about the high-speed rail project. Mm. They're looking at alternatives for that project and going through that environmental process right now. The electrification project for Caltrain doesn't include any elevation of the existing right-of-way.
Well, let's hear from Bill in Michigan. Hi, Bill.
Hello. How are you?
Well, thanks. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wondered if the agencies, the powers that be, had considered the future effect of automated vehicles and ride sharing services on the future of their ridership. I mean, in 10 to 15 years, if I can get door to door service and Wi-Fi and ride sharing from an efficient network of automated vehicles, might I not choose to take the train? Mm. And so that's really what I just, has that been considered?
Bill, thanks. Yes, autonomous vehicles is definitely a big topic here in the Bay Area. Randy Rentschler, can you address Bill's question?
Well, I can't help myself because I'm from Michigan and my whole family works in the automobile business. I'm just in the mobility business here in California. But look, I don't think these things are in conflict. In places like San Francisco Bay Area, our entire economy works because we can move vast numbers of people with public transit. The idea that we can replace that kind of capacity with automated vehicles isn't going to happen. It's really a complementary thing. Like a lot of things in transportation, they work together. If we can get in the future automated vehicles that can maximize the use of our limited freeways here in the Bay Area, that would be great. But that's never going to be enough to take out the capacity we need for BART, for Caltrain, for other things. So look, we look forward to the automobile industry and the high-tech industry here based in the Bay Area to come to an answer on this thing. But we're going to need all the above to support the economy we have out here.
Bill, thanks. Ron, I mean, do you want to add something to that? I'm sure you're considering this as you
look. Of course. As we came up with our proposals, we made sure they were future-proof, that they take into account the changes we see coming in transportation and that they're good investments no matter what. And we talk a lot about roads and streets. And the fact is most people in this corridor don't want to expand our highways. They don't want more cars in their communities. They don't want more cars in their downtowns, whether they're autonomous or not. So while these will be popular products, we still need to find ways for people to get around walking, which is something we're promoting through the way we're growing in this corridor. Biking, huge bike plans are happening in Silicon Valley right now, trying to make it safe for everybody. And then if you need to come a longer distance, then take a train. But it's just hard to imagine everybody traveling around this corridor in an autonomous car.
Well, again, Bill, thanks. And we've got a lot of calls and comments coming in. Anna writes, I ride Caltrain from time to time, and it definitely needs improvement. I'm appalled that the current administration, despite blasting out their willingness to invest in public infrastructure, refused the funds for electrification of the commuter train. Why do we still think of the USA as a leader in the world when we don't even have a way to move around the state without a car? Emily writes, no more money until scheduling is solved. So another person who would like to see some changes to scheduling, Sarah in San Francisco. Good morning to you.
Hi there. I wanted to ask about bicycle capacity on the trains. There's a lot of us who live in San Francisco and work down the peninsula, and we commute to the train station on our bicycles and then, commute back at the other end on our bikes. And the capacity has gotten increasingly worse. Nowadays, if you don't get on at King Street Station, you can't get on the train with your bicycle during the hours that you need to commute. Back after
Sarah, I think there's something wrong with your connection, but we're getting a sense of your question, which is bicycle capacity. Seamus Murphy, do you want to address that?
Yeah, just like capacity for every other type of rider, capacity for cyclists will be increased as well once we're able to electrify Caltrain. We have a minimum ratio that the board has set, the Caltrain board has set, for how many seats to bikes will be allowed on the trains in the future. We're going to be able to preserve that ratio that exists today, but the expanded frequency of the service means that more capacity will exist overall on the system for bikes. It's absolutely an important consideration. We need to make sure that we're providing cyclists, who are really the most responsible first and last mile users of the system, with an opportunity to ride the system. At the same time, we need to recognize that space on the trains is maximized if we can use that space for riders. So for people who don't need to bring bikes on the train, we're going to be adding additional wayside bike stores storage improvements and making it easier for people to leave their bike at the station if that's an option for them. We have a great valet bike operator in San Francisco at the 4th and King Station where passengers can leave their bike for up to 2 days at no cost and leave it overnight if they need to and they don't have to bring their bike on the train. So we want to expand those options. We also want to expand the ability for people to bring their bikes on the train.
And again, Seamus Murphy is Chief Communications Officer for Caltrain. Randy Rentschler is with us from the Metropolitan Transportation Commission. And Radna Amin, Transportation Policy Director at SPUR. We're looking at SPUR's proposal for Caltrain, a Caltrain of the future. And that proposal is on our website, kqed.org/forum. And we're hearing from our listeners this hour. Tom in Los Gatos is next. Hi, Tom.
Hi, good morning, Nina. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
It's been a fascinating discussion. Levies are, I should say, right-of-ways often act as unofficial levies. So they sometimes protect our infrastructure as well as the tracks, and sometimes they interfere with the flow of waters in the marshes and affect wildlife if they're not, you know, properly designed. But they're very common in the Bay Area, especially here in the South Bay. Elevated tracks run right through Alviso into downtown San Jose. And they often have problems with derailment due to the marshy conditions. It seems like a modern right-of-ways and ballast can be elevated and designed to prevent not just track damage, but flooding to protect the animals and habitat as well as human infrastructure. Even half of the budget could be used, I think, to prevent flooding. Places like, you know, San Jose, Gilroy, Morgan Hill, throughout the East Bay and so on. And it could even have spur tracks to protect individual infrastructure developments, whatever there is, high tech or just housing developments.
So, Tom, did you have a question?
Now, the question is, has this ever been considered as a co-production between the, flood control people in California along with, transportation in the 101 Caltrain corridor?
Randy Rentschler?
Look, it's a good question about how we're going to deal with protecting our infrastructure in the future from climate change and how we can have some resilience. As the caller mentions, Highway 101, all the toll bridges, a whole lot of our transit systems are going to be subject to a future which has a lot of uncertainty to it. So we're looking at this resilience right now. We're doing it with our friends at the California Department of Transportation. It's going to be relevant. It's still a few years away before we have to worry about it. But, you know, when Highway 37 has been closed for flooding now for about a week, this issue is coming at us a little faster than we expected.
Well, Tom, thanks for raising that. And let me there's a lot of listener questions coming in. I don't think you can address them all, Seamus, but let me just get them on the record for you. One listener asks, will the Morgan Hill Gilroy area ever get more trains, maybe even on weekends like other cities? We now have weekday-only service, and the three trains leave before the sun rises. Joel wonders, why are the proposed weekend trains for April 2017 so infrequent? They're going to go from every hour to every hour and a half. Ian asks, has there been any talk of a unified fare zone? One ticket for the whole bay would make transit much easier. Any talk of that?
Well, you know, we have a Clipper card now that tries to take the friction away from the fact that we do have 26, 28, 30, you count them, transit districts here in the Bay Area. I think it is an ambition to do something about the multitude of districts and the policies we have, but at least we have a technical solution to this fundamental political problem. On the issue of how Caltrain operates its schedule, I'm just going to hand all that off to Seamus.
Yeah, the schedule change from 60 minutes to 90 minutes on the weekend is one that is being done so that we can construct the electrification project. We need to build in some work windows so that we can actually build the electrification infrastructure. One of the biggest challenges for this project is building a major improvement while we're operating an existing railroad that has extremely high ridership demand. So it's a schedule change that anticipates the need to be able to do that. Every time we do a major project, as Randy can attest to, having gone through a couple of bridge retrofits, there is some short-term impacts that need to be accommodated so that we can have that long-term benefit.
Ratna Amin.
Yeah, well, another point on scheduling that we discuss in the vision plan is that there's a big difference between the amount of growth around each of these station areas and where are you going to put the service. Where should the train stop? Should it stop at every single stop, no matter how many riders there are? or should we focus express trains between the largest centers? And so we really need to decide if we're going to grow around these transit stations, then you'll get more trains.
Well, let me see if I can squeeze in one last call. Greg in Woodside. Hi, Greg.
Hi. I just want to say, you know, I use the train and the BART, and I don't really think it's cheap right now. And they're talking about, you know, increasing the cost. And I think, you know, with people that commute into the city and work in, like, you know, jobs that don't pay much more than minimum wage, or, you know, people on restricted incomes, it's not a cheap, you know, transportation choice.
Well, Seamus Murphy, with this, you know, examination that you're doing of fares, are we looking at a significant increase in fares once all is said and done?
Well, one thing we are looking at is a means-based fare. We want to make sure that we're not that our system is accessible for everybody that wants to use it, and that includes making fares affordable for people of all means. So we're looking at that as a recommendation. The region MTC is also doing some work on a regional means-based fare study that will hopefully create some coordination around the region for how we can do that most effectively.
Is this big vision plan that Spur put out valuable to Caltrain, the $16 billion far-reaching plan?
Absolutely.
And if it is, how? Just
it
quickly.
Is. It's great to have input for the long-term improvements that will make the system what it needs to be able to accommodate growth in the Bay Area and serve our communities in the best way we can. And it's a testament to how important it is to do the first step in that long-term vision and electrify Caltrain.
Seamus Murphy of Caltrain, thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
And thanks also Radna Amin of Spur and Randy Rentschler from the Metropolitan Transportation Commission. And thanks to our listeners for your great questions and comments. Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Judy Campbell, Tina Lauerberg, and Susan Britton. Our engineer today is Howard Gelman, and our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Holly Kernan is our executive producer, and Amanda Stupai is our engagement producer. I'm Mina Kim. Thanks.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of the Minetti Schremm Museum of Art at UC Davis, who believe that all people deserve access to education and culture to enrich a lifetime of exploration and learning.